It's so interesting to me how God works things out. Mr. Meininger was going to be here just to enjoy a break from speaking. I had asked him earlier if he wanted to do a sermonette, and he said, well, my buddy's giving a sermonette that day, and I'd like to listen to him. So I said, that's okay. I said, well, make sure you've got a sermon ready just in case I can't make it over the hill. He said, okay, I'll have a sermon ready. Well, as it worked out, I came over, and he didn't have to, and then Justin was feeling really sick yesterday from food poisoning or something. So he stepped in for the sermonette today, and I really appreciate that. But it's so interesting how his sermonette fits so well with the sermon. I've said this many, many times in the past, and I am just absolutely convinced that God has a certain message he wants us to get, and he makes sure we get it some way, one way or another. Well, as he mentioned or alluded to, today is the last day of the fiscal year 2016, which is, last year's been a very interesting year for all of us in both congregations. We've had new babies being born, new members joining us in fellowship. We had a full year of the health and fitness challenge. We had some nice socials and opportunities to do things together over the last year. We've also faced some challenges, some bigger than others to some of us, but we made it. We got through another year. As of midnight tonight, 2016 no longer exists, and 2017 comes on board. Milestones in our lives, many times, seem to cause us to think about our futures as well as reflect on our past. In 4 days, I'm going to turn 69 years old. Hearing that come across my lips is like unnerving to me. I can remember when 69 was a really old man. But I thought I was really old back then, but I don't feel that old, to be honest with you. I actually feel fairly young. But then I think about people like Alva White, who is 96 in our Sacramento congregation, Virginia Roby, who is 94 in our Sacramento congregation, John Hall, who's going to turn 92 in 3 days in our Reno congregation, and several others in their 80s. I don't feel so old. But it is just a thing to me. It's like 69 is like almost bigger to me than 70. Because once you hit 70, it's like you're way, way over the hill. You're on the downhill slide of life. And I got a whole year before I can get into that. But it makes me think about what kind of a legacy I will and what kind of a legacy I have left behind in my life. Living for 69 years, a lot's happened. All my life, I've been fascinated with discussing and spending time with those older than me. It's just been something that I've enjoyed doing ever since I was a teenager. I'd love to get together with 69-year-old guys and talk to them. But even today, I love getting together with people that are 80, 90. I've had the occasion to talk to somebody who's in 100. And when you talk to individuals that are older than you, you can get the opportunity for experiences that you have not yet had, possibly, or to be able to look at them from a little bit different perspective. It always seems to lead and encourages me to a more self-evaluative position in my life. I know the Passover period of time is one of those times when we want to be self-evaluating, but just when we hit these milestones, sometimes it just makes me self-evaluate. Turn with me, if you would, over to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. You know, evaluating and assessing our lives is something that can either depress us or encourage us, depending on what we've got to look back on. Personally, I think it takes courage to be willing to really do this. At Passover, we do it for a little bit different perspective, but just to do it in general, to look back and evaluate and assess your life and ask yourself, where have I been? What have I done? How have I done? If you think about it, there aren't too many things that get accomplished in our lives that aren't planned for in advance as a result of evaluation and possibly assessment. We can look at things, look at our lives, and think, you know, something's missing here, and make it an effort to change it, to turn it around. I've accomplished many goals in my personal life. I keep setting my goals about once a year. I use typically the first of the year to go. I've got in the back of my little binder that I have, my little day timer, a list of goals, and I keep updating, and I smile when I can put a line through one of them. Because it's encouraging to me to know that I actually was able to make the effort to have something else be crossed off that list. And then I go through and I evaluate the ones I have on that list, and I ask myself, do I want to add anything to this? Do I want to take anything off of this? Is something now changed where this is not really a primary goal for me in my life anymore? There have been some things on my goals list that have eluded me. I haven't been able to accomplish them, primarily because I haven't focused on accomplishing them. I've learned all through my life that if you focus on something, you can normally accomplish it, God willing, and it's not contrary to God's way of life. Let me ask you a question. Have you taken the time recently and stopped to just and think about what you've accomplished in your life? I don't care how old you are. The older you are, the more thought processes you'll have to think about. It can be an interesting thing to do. And again, I like to do this at least once a year to myself. And I literally go into my man cave, which is my office, and I just close the doors, maybe turn on some light music, and I'll just sit and think, what have I done? What have I done that I'm proud of? What accomplishments have I achieved in my life, going back wherever you want to go back? And what have I accomplished in my life or done in my life that I'm not so happy with, that maybe I can fix or change or do something differently about it? Paul did some of this self-assessment himself quite a bit, an evaluation of his life, as we're going to see here in 2 Corinthians 11. We're going to break into the conversation where Paul is actually condemning false teachers and prophets and showing that life has one of the, his life is one of recognition and accomplishment. He looked back and he had regrets. One of the biggest regrets he had was killing Christians and being an individual going after and trying to destroy what he believed to be wrong. We'll actually see Paul iterating some of the things that we've actually been studying in the book of Acts Bible study, some of the things that he's already gone through. He mentions them here in 2 Corinthians 11. Let's begin in 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 22. He said, "Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. They don't have anything on me. I'm right up there with them. Are they ministers of Christ?" He takes a turn here. He said, "I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one." We've read about some of that. 3 times I was beaten with rods. We read about that. And once I was stoned. We read about that. I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I've been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren. I've been through it all. There's probably not anything that I've experienced that most mankind combined have experienced. In weariness and in toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Besides the other things that come upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. He was pointing out that a lot had taken place in his life and continued to take place daily, but he kept moving forward with new assignments, new goals, new challenges, new plans. Let's go over to 2 Timothy 4 now. 2 Timothy chapter 4. We were a little earlier. You know, like I said, we've read about some of those things that Paul was referring to in the Acts Bible study that we've been doing. And Paul once again here in 2 Timothy 4 puts a capstone on his life in his discussion with Timothy. He was constantly assessing, and he was using his assessment of himself to help teach those around him, especially those younger, like Timothy, who he brought on basically as a son to help him in the ministry. He had met many goals in his life and accomplished many things that he had set before himself. And some of those goals darn near cost him his life because he was so committed to the goals. And he had accomplished probably the most important goal when he's talking to Timothy here in 2 Timothy 4. Let's begin in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 7. He said, Timothy, I've fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Paul wants us to know, and he's trying to get us to see, that our lives and what we do with them have everything to do with our future. We can't just go through life and just let it happen. Sometimes we get into a routine, and routines are good because it keeps us on track. But sometimes routines can become ruts, and ruts can get us off track. And unless we reassess our lives on occasion, we can be getting into a rut and not even realize it. And I'll talk more about that in a little bit here. It is interesting that God also reviewed his efforts, his accomplishments, his goals, and his plans. Go back to Genesis 1, all the way back to the very, very beginning. And I think this is interesting to assess our lives in the perspective of how God himself assessed his activities, his efforts. We all know about the creation account back here in Genesis and all that took place in that very short period of time. God looked back on what he did during this recreation of the earth and made comments about what he had accomplished. He was self-assessing. He was reviewing. He was taking note. I'm going to break into the story in Genesis 1 and verse 10. This is the beginning of the third day of the earth's recreation. Genesis 1 verse 10. And God called the dry land earth, and he gathered together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Now it's interesting, side note, that this was not the first thing that he had done, but it's the first thing that he called good. He started getting the earth ready for mankind. And he knew what man needed. And as he accomplished that, he looked back on it and he saw that it was good. Drop down to verse 12, Genesis 1, verse 12. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God looked at what he did. And he smiled. He said, this is good. This is good what I just did. And this is the end of the third day. Now drop down to verse 17 of Genesis 1. Genesis 1:17, God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth. He's talking about the sun and the moon. And to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. The fourth day is done now, and the same thing happened on the fifth, the same thing happened on the sixth. God did what he was doing, and he saw it, and he said, this is good. He looked back on what he did. Drop down to verse 31. We'll see that he added something to the conclusion of the sixth day when he was done doing this recreation. Genesis 1, verse 31. Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good. So evening and the morning were the sixth day. Then how did he end it all? After he said, this is really good. This isn't just good. This is very good. This is perfect. As we can find later, he said this was perfect what he had done. And he appreciated what he did. Let's go to the next chapter. What did he do after that? Verse 1, chapter 2. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of them were finished. God was done with his recreation. And on the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. What's he telling us there? He sat back in his easy chair, put his feet up on the ottoman, grabbed a cold drink, sipped on it, and said, "This is great. This is really cool. I did all this. I created man, created all those animals, all that stuff." And then he sat back on the Sabbath and said, "This is great. If God's going to do that, why wouldn't we?" I mean, think about it. He sat back and he rested, kicked back, evaluated the past week and said, "This is good. This is really good." There's an encouraging lesson to be learned here by us. Do something positive with our lives, and that takes some planning and some effort. I understand that. Look back and assess it later on. Review it so that we can be an encouragement to ourselves as well as an encouragement to others. That's what it's all about. It's like God took the seventh day, sat back, relaxed, and enjoyed what he had accomplished. Turn to John 17 now, if you would. John chapter 17. We know that the God of the Old Testament that was doing all this recreating was Jesus Christ, the Word. Well, he did it back then, and he also did it in his life when he was here on this earth as a man, going back and assess the actions of his earthly presence. Let's actually take a look at part of the real Lord's Prayer here in John 17. It's a passage of Scripture that we rehearse every year at Passover evening, because it's God talking, Jesus Christ talking to God the Father about his impending departure and what he's leaving behind. Here we'll see in John 17, Jesus Christ going over in his mind and in his heart and sharing with it, with the Father, just what he had accomplished while he was here on this earth. This is what he's doing. He's going back and assessing his accomplishments. And he's talking to God the Father about it. Let's begin in John 1, 17, verse 1. Jesus spoke these words, lifted up his eyes to heaven, and said, "Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son may also glorify you." Talking about his impending departure. Drop down to verse 4. He said, "I have glorified you on the earth. I have finished the work you have given me to do." Or, "I have accomplished what I was expected to do, all that was part of the value of serving you, God the Father." Verse 5, "And now, O Father, glorify me together with yourself with the glory that I had with you before the world was. I have manifested your name to the men whom you have given me out of the world. They are yours. You gave them to me, and they have kept your word. Now they have known that all things which you have given to me are from you." This is a self-assessment of what he had done while he was here on this earth, a review of his life and a review of his accomplishments. Paul also took another look at his life as he appraised his efforts and used them to teach others. Paul was doing this constantly. As we saw earlier, Paul continually was analyzing where he had been and what he had accomplished, and he was trying to use it to encourage others. Yeah, you're going to go through some tough times. You're going to hit some bumps in the road. You may even get beaten once in a while. But just think about it. You've accomplished something as a result of that. He lived physically. How he lived mentally, physically, and spiritually, he assessed constantly. I read an article recently in a magazine, and the magazine is called Experience Life. It's a magazine put together by a health and fitness center around the country. The editor-in-chief, Jamie Martin, wrote an editorial note about the theme of their most recent issue. The theme on their most recent issue was in big, bold letters, "Bring it on!" Exclamation point. She was concerned that the theme may be misinterpreted as being, and I quote, "People trying to one-up each other in attempts to prove their superiority in strength, intellect, commitment, you name it." She went on to mention that if they kept the theme, "Bring it on," it had to complement, quoting again, and more importantly, support our mission of empowering our readers to become their healthiest, happiest, and most authentic selves. What a great goal for an individual to have in life. Her bottom line was that each of us has the capacity and the ability to actually decide and choose what's next, for the most part, not in all cases maybe in our lives, of what we want to do with our lives from that day forward. And I wonder how many of us actually do that. Most of us, especially when we were younger, felt like we were going to live forever. I remember being a teenager thinking, man, I'm invincible. There's nothing I can't do, nothing I can't go to, nothing I can't become. There's so much time to do anything I want. But it goes by a lot faster than we think, doesn't it? Where did 2016 go? I mean, it's like, boom, it's gone. A whole year, gone. Compared to the plan of God, though, we're only here for a short period of time to accomplish what we may while we are here on this earth. And the Bible shows us that through God's will, that we are capable of doing almost anything we put our minds to. God has given us an incredible power. He's given us a human mind, which is one of the most phenomenal things ever created by God. I believe God and Jesus Christ want us to bring it on in every aspect of our lives. Physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, especially in our spiritual lives. For some of us, we look at setting goals and making plans for the future in our life when our life's not going too well. It's not going well, so we need to try to figure something else out. Maybe we aren't growing mentally, maybe we're not doing things emotionally like we think we could or should, physically, spiritually. We've got some aspect of our lives we just don't like where we're at. Well, brethren, some of this happens because of our approach to life. Turn with me, if you would, to Ecclesiastes 9. Ecclesiastes 9. Right on the heels of Proverbs. Many of us would like things to be different in our lives, but we just don't know how, or we don't have the will to be able to make it happen. This last year, we had the health and fitness challenge. Yet I wonder how many of us actually worked to incorporate these many beneficial suggestions over an entire year period of time. Let me ask everyone a question. When was the last time you did something dramatically different in your life or with your life? I don't care how old you are, I don't care how young you are. When was the last time you did something really dramatically different? Really think about that for a moment or two. Here's another question. If I could change one thing in my life, what would it be? If I had the power to change one thing in my life, what would I change? Seriously, think about these things. What would you really like to change? Do you suffer from insomnia? Have issues with friendships? What about your family? What about your health? Maybe it's your weight. Maybe it's your physical condition. Maybe it's your means of support or your career. Maybe it's where you live. Maybe it's who you live with. Yes, you can fix that too. The pains that you're living with, maybe it's that. Maybe it's the person you live with that's giving you the pains that you got. I don't know. Maybe it's fears and things that you worry about. Maybe it's loneliness. What is the one thing in your life that you would like to change. Brethren, whatever it may be, something can be done about it if you really want to do something about it. To make something different happen, for a different result to take place, we have to change what we are doing and or how we are doing what we are doing. If we don't make those changes, change is never going to take place in our lives. I could give this exact same sermon December 31st, 2017, and I can ask you the same question, you'll say nothing. Because we could go through another year that quickly and absolutely change nothing in our life. There are many books on the subject, changing your life, making planning, setting goals, or seminars you can go to. There's all kinds of stuff you can go. Most will agree, though, trying to accomplish something in life that is different than what you're doing now, you've got to begin with the end in mind. What is it the end result is going to be? Here in Ecclesiastes 9, we'll read one verse. This is like the springboard to making changes in our lives. Let's read Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10. Ecclesiastes 9, 10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Because where you're going to go afterwards, nothing, it's not going to matter. So while you're here, why won't you do the best that you can do with what you're doing? Whatever we are embarking on, give it our might, give it our entire being, and have some fun with it. Doing these kinds of exercise can actually be a really fun thing to do. Bringing it on as only you can do it. There's 40 of us sitting here in this room, something like that. Every single person in this room is completely unique to themselves. Every single person. And however you decide to tackle this is going to be your own unique way. And your accomplishments are going to be unique to you. How it affects your life will be unique to you. And I'm sure you all have felt, and if you haven't, I really feel bad for you, and you need to start making some more changes. How good it feels to make an accomplishment happen. How rewarding that feels. How fulfilling that is. Every one of us can do that. Let's go back to Psalm 1. Psalm 1. I know all this takes work. It takes planning, and it takes a willingness to do what is necessary to make something happen, but it can happen. I think we just need to be reminded of it once in a while that it actually can happen. Sometimes, to bring our best forward, we have to let something else go to make space for what we want to do. This is what I was referring to earlier, where our routines can become our ruts. Whether it's our career, or our family, our personal growth, our physical condition, our spiritual focus. Again, when was the last time you did something really different with your life? I mean really different. Something you've never done before. Approach you've never taken before. Why do you think it is that so many people make New Year's resolutions? They want to change something. They want something to change in their life. And as we heard in the sermon, they join the gym. 2 months later, they keep paying the fees and they don't go to the gym anymore. They waste their money. They buy some equipment and they use it for a week and then they don't use the equipment anymore and it gathers dust in their garage like I've done in the past. People want to make change. They want to make changes in their lives. And I'm guessing, and I'd like to know if I'm wrong, I'm guessing every single person in this room would like to see something change in your life. Maybe something dramatic. How do you make this happen? It's like part of this in Psalm 1. It's simple, but there's a blessing tied to it. Psalm 1, beginning in verse 1. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of God, and in his law he meditates day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the river's water that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. I wonder if we appreciate what that passage of Scripture actually means. Turn all the way back to Genesis 39. And I'm going to show you an example of Genesis, or Psalm 1, verse 3, in action. Remember he said, if a person lives like that, God is their focus, they've got their noses in the Bible all the time, they're trying to learn God's way of life, trying to walk God's way of life, it's going to be like a tree planted by the river's edge. What does that mean? You don't have to worry about watering it, do you? It's got all the water it needs. It's got all the nourishment it needs. All the nourishment flowing down the river is going to feed that tree. And that tree is going to grow, and that tree is going to produce. And an individual that lives their life like that, God says everything they do is going to prosper. Has everything you've done in your life prospered? I doubt it. But this is a promise that God made to us. If our approach in life is to seek God in his way of life, whatever we do, God says we will prosper. Remember what we just read in Ecclesiastes 9? We can all bring it on, folks. We really can. Probably a lot more than we ever have if we just choose to. There was an individual that we read about in Genesis 39 that was bringing it on all the time, so to speak. He was living Psalm 1, verse 3, and he was prospering. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about Joseph. After he was sold into slavery by his brothers. Let's pick it up in Genesis 39, verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. An Egyptian observed Joseph living his life, a godly life, and said, everything this guy does turns to gold. We know the terrible accusations of Potiphar's wife that landed Joseph in prison. What happened there in prison? Drop down to Genesis 39, verse 20. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all of the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. In other words, Joseph had the oversight of everything. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because he knew that if he gave it to Joseph, it was going to get done. Because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Psalm 1, verse 3, folks, coming to life. Joseph was living it and reaping the blessings before Psalm 1 was ever written. See, the principle existed for eternity. Follow God, and you will prosper. God tells us that we can have this type of success and change in our lives as well. It's a matter of our focus. So we get ready to close. Let's go back to the New Testament, John chapter 10. John chapter 10. It's in here somewhere. Here it is. Christ also talked about us being able to bring it on in our lives. Before I get to John 10, let me share something with you. We just saw that God will make all that we do prosper so that we are successful if we are seeking Him and dedicating ourselves to His way of life. What is success in our life? What does it mean to you? How would you define it? Let me give you an acronym for success. This is, I thought, really cool. Success. S. Set your goal. U. Understand the obstacles. Because there's going to be some obstacles. C. Create a positive mental picture. Visualize yourself doing it, accomplishing it. C. Clear your mind of self-doubt. Don't booby-trap yourself. E. Embrace the challenge. Put a smile on your face and say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this happen. S. Stay on track. Don't let yourself get into a rut and not be able to go back to it. And the final S, show yourself in the world that you can do it. And with God's Spirit and our seeking the will of God in our lives, this is exactly what can happen in our lives. Christ wants us to be able to bring it on every day of our lives. One thing that you had suggested to you today was, if you haven't done it before, maybe even if you have done it before, do it again. Read through the Bible. You've got a resource. Mr. Meininger gave it to you. Studyyourbible.org. And guess what? At midnight tonight, you can get started. Make a commitment to do it. How could anything be more beneficial than something like that? And it would probably be a springboard for you to get into other things. Jesus Christ shows us the same concept of bringing it on here in John 10. Let's just read one verse, one we've read many, many times before, John 10, verse 10. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. He has told us that He came here that we may have life and that we may have it more abundantly. He wants us to revel in this abundance. And what we read earlier in Ecclesiastes about finding something we want to do and then doing it with our whole being, our whole might, all we have to do is choose what we want to accomplish. You've got a lot of power on your side to be able to do that. And I'm suggesting to you something dramatically different than you've ever done before. And maybe reading the Bible through cover to cover in a year is dramatically different. Good for you. Go for it. Do it. One last scripture. Proverbs 3. Proverbs chapter 3. All we have to do is choose what we want to accomplish. Jesus Christ also, back in John, told us not to worry about what is coming our way. As you heard in a recent sermon, God and Jesus Christ have given you everything you need to deal with today. Just worry about today. Deal with today. Don't worry about tomorrow. Because when tomorrow arrives, He's going to give you exactly what you need to handle tomorrow. We don't have to worry about it. It'll work out. Worry and anxiety have been proven scientifically to age us and even can kill us. These are debilitating forces in our minds and in our hearts. If we begin to trust God and Jesus Christ more than we ever have before, a lot of this will just disappear. And I've been harping on that for 6 months now. I know I have. Because I think it's really important for all of us to grasp that. What we read here in Proverbs 3 has actually been confirmed by recent scientific research, believe it or not. We'll see the wisdom of Solomon expounded here in Proverbs 3. He points out that trusting in God can actually be good for our bodies, our minds, and our life. Let's begin in Proverbs 3 and verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. And then the verse 8. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. God said, you want your body to be stronger? Practice Proverbs 3, verses 5 through 7. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. God has planned what he is going to accomplish. And we can plan what we are going to accomplish. God willing. Try to set aside some time soon and think what you'd like to accomplish down the road, maybe for the next week, maybe the next month, maybe the next year or longer. It's always fun to set some goals and stretch your mind a little bit. I would encourage you, if you've never done it before, and again, I've said this many times, put it on paper. Get a little book, get a little notepad, get a little something. I've got two or three of them that I've kept for decades in my life. And go back to it once in a while and look at what you set your goals to. I always date my goals so I know when I updated my list. Then I can go back and look at it and reevaluate it. But then it's really exciting when you go back to the list and you can put a line through one of them. I mean, sometimes I accomplish something and I didn't even realize it was on my goal list until I go back and review it at the end of the year. We can look back and assess, review, and be encouraged that we've done something different than we did the year before. We have our Savior at our side to guide us, supporting us, encouraging us, and leading us, so that we too can bring it on. Bring it on in every aspect of our lives. Have a wonderful, prosperous, positive, powerful 2017.